If you're looking for a fling, or a lifetime, or a, well, I'm free Friday anyway kind of thing, find it on Bumble. Fall in love with dating. Welcome to Finger Food, empowered by Bumble. I'm your maitre d', Stacey O, and I'm here to serve you intimate conversations around sexuality and pleasure. On the menu is a selection of heart-to-hearts with people who vulnerably share their stories, insights, and perspectives. This podcast is about sex and so much more. We explore connection, letting go of judgment, and accepting ourselves exactly as we are. Let's dine. In this episode, I chat to Maddox Drew. Maddox is a psychology student, special needs carer, and proud nerd. Psychology is one of their greatest passions, and he feels is his purpose on this planet. In this intimate conversation, Maddox shares their journey with transitioning at school, how he experienced sexism as a girl and then male privilege as a boy, all the while coming up against transphobia. Now non-binary, they talk about how their sexual preference has changed and evolved throughout his transition, and how they have navigated relationships along the way. It's great to have you here at the table. Let's get started.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So welcome, Maddox. It's so wonderful to have you here. Thank you so much for agreeing to come in and chat to me and, yeah, share your experience.
Absolutely. Wonderful to be here.
Oh. So let's just dive straight into it, shall we?
Absolutely.
So my first question to you is, where are you from? What's your family background?
So born and raised in Auckland. My parents are both English, London, Surrey, as far as I know. My family's kind of in Hamilton as well as in mainly out east in Auckland. So definitely a more conservative side of things in regards to who my parents are as people, but they're definitely a bit crazy. I have an older sister. So, yeah, I don't have any really strong attachments to my cultural side, if that makes sense. Obviously, I'm European, so like my world's around me all the time anyway.
Yeah.
So I've never had to look for it.
Yeah.
It's kind of just my mum and I mainly and my granddad on my mum's side. That's my main family at this moment.
Beautiful. Yeah. Beautiful. And next question. What are your pronouns and what do they mean to you?
So I go by he, they now. The they part of that is a more recent development. I used to go by she, her before I realised I had a choice in what I went by. And then the more I've gone into my transition and the more I've kind of just explored how I feel within the gender binary, I realised that I actually don't strictly adhere to being a binary male. So I was like, let's try how they feels, and people around me were using they a lot more often. So the more comfortable I got with it, and also wider people around me, social circles and things like that, I was like, actually, I can do this. So, yeah, he, they are what I'm trying to go by now. And maybe I'll go into strictly they, them. But at this point, I'm pretty fluid between both expressions.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful. And so, yeah, you mentioned to me prior to this recording that your experience of being trans, a lot of your sexual experiences are deeply integrated, obviously, with your gender journey. So I'm interested to know what your sexual orientation is in this moment and what that means to you.
So if I were to put a label on it, I would say either queer or pansexual. I've never really had a preference ever for a certain body type or for how someone looks to me. If someone's cute and they're trying to kiss me, I'm gonna, and you know, consensually, I'm gonna be like, okay, you know, it's not too much a, it's not too much of a big deal for me. And I thought everyone was like that growing up. So growing up as female, you kind of get taught this very certain way, and especially from me coming from a more English kind of background with quite conservative, polite grandparents, sex was never something talked about, and especially not female sexuality. So when I was growing up, I thought people only talked about their guy crushes, but they didn't talk about their girl ones. So I just thought that was kind of the rule. And then when I started to actually express to other people, like, hey, that girl's cute, they were like, huh? And they got really confused. So yeah, I kind of always knew that I was pansexual, but I didn't realize that it was a label that had to be differentiated from the heteronormativity that was around me. And my sister, bless her heart, but she's also, she's so incredibly heterosexual.
Yeah.
So I wasn't exactly looking at my older sibling being like, oh, this is, there's different ways of expressing myself outside of these binaries, because she's so perfectly slotted into them. And that's nothing wrong with that, of course, but it didn't provide me. I had to kind of navigate that world very much on my own. There was no family context in which I could, I didn't know what the word pansexual was until way later into my life, whereas some people know from the age of, you know, 10, and especially now, you know. So yeah, it's been a bit of a complicated journey, but then also a very simple one. More just, I've always known, but I didn't realize it was something I had to know and actually explain to people, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. How did that feel navigating that, growing up and knowing that your sister was very heterosexual, very fit in the box, and then you're saying that for you, you just didn't realise that not everyone was feeling these feelings towards multiple genders and sexualities and all the things. How did you navigate that?
With difficulty, probably, was the best answer for that. Because, yeah, growing up, the way I was deemed pretty enough to be a pretty female, but I wasn't as pretty as my sister. I also wasn't as straight as her, you know. So I think a lot of my life, especially her being older, she was navigating a lot more mature experiences that I was desperate to be a part of, but I was still just that year younger. So navigating it was just kind of learning how to, kind of being reintroduced to sexism on a more fronting basis, kind of the slurs that boys would always call girls for. Because I was confrontational, my sister wasn't, who would have thought? typically an attitude of mine, apparently. So growing up, I was always very bossy and always this, and my sister was always very quiet and polite. So I grew up knowing that I wasn't her, but I had no idea that that was something I had to actually manage. So yeah, in regards to my sexuality, I guess the internet was honestly a blessing. Obviously, there's a lot of quite cursed content out there, but it definitely, you know, I did countless quizzes to try and find out who I was, and hundreds of thousands of them. I've never been an amazing top student in anything, but I was acing those quizzes. I was getting 100%, like, yeah, I'm so gay, like, this is amazing. Yeah, so the internet was a big one, I think, in that.
Amazing. Amazing. And I guess, yeah, we've kind of gone into this, but how did your sort of relationship with your sexuality change throughout your transition? How did that evolve, and how did that look, and what ages were you in?
Well, going back to slightly shorter me.
Yes.
When I was a girl, I was far more attracted to girls growing into my teens than I realised, to the point where I was like, I could never be with a man. Oh my God, men. kind of thing.
Yeah.
I still maybe hold that attitude now, but it's definitely a bit reversed. So yeah, when I started to transition and started to get on testosterone and things like that, and it affects your sex drive and the way you experience pleasure in general, but also only being about 14, 15 at the time of my transition, I started to realize that I wasn't actually as attracted to females. So when I was identifying as gay, but it wasn't actually the person who I was attracted to. It was the whole idea of actually being gay, so to speak. Mm. So when I was female, I was more attracted to other females. But then when I started looking and presenting masculine, I realized I liked men more and more masculine presenting people. So the areas of my pansexuality never changed, and that always remained a constant. But I realized that my attention, so to speak, kind of diversified across, and I started to appreciate things in masculinity that I found attractive than what I found attractive in femininity. But then at the same time, when you're trans, there's this narrative that is perpetuated of you aren't fuckable and you aren't wanting to have people don't want to have sex with you, and people that do want to have sex with you, they're from kink communities, which is fine, but not, you don't always want to be a fetish, you know. And I was quite young when I was hearing these narratives. So going into my transition, I had the idea that people wouldn't want to have sex with me. And that changed quite quickly when I realized that people did. And I was like, oh, this is surprising. But the attitudes towards sex from women versus sex from men and how that's been taught on a binary sense is so different. So it was weird navigating that, not only as someone looking for people, but also experiencing that shift myself of what female sexuality looks like, and then the entitlement to sex that men experience, and having that privilege suddenly put on me. Yeah.
Wow.
It was a massive shift, because suddenly I wasn't bossy or, you know, a slut or something like that. Suddenly it was like, oh, you're just a normal guy and you're a leader. So I went from a place in school where I was like, you're a good student and but you're a bossy girl, to suddenly, oh, academic prefect, captains of all these teams, leader, speaking up in front of assemblies as this, like, poster child for the school.
Wow.
But still having to navigate the intense amount of sexism and transphobia that exists anyway, and also just trying to live your life, you know, doing NCA level 1 and level 2 while having to make decisions like, hey, by the way, when you go on testosterone, you're going to become infertile. You won't be able to have children of your own. Do you want to freeze your eggs now? I said, if I freeze my eggs now, I'll be 25, because 10 years, by the time I have to decide if having children or not. And then later on in my transition, they're like, oh, actually, no, if you went off tea, you can get pregnant again. So navigating all those in my appointments and getting into surgery and being on hormones and going through a second puberty while everyone's like, hey, pass your MCAT, you know? So it's like, and I'm bad at maths anyway. So it was just a lot to go through, I think, but it turned out all right, I think.
I am absolutely mind blown by this and you, and like how articulate you are in sharing this. And
oh, I had to do it plenty of times before.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're amazing. Okay, so how was your mental health over that period of
sorry, no, that's fine. That's fine.
Preface that question, yeah. But I'm
no, it's fine. It's fine.
I'm in this moment. That is so much, and I can't even possibly begin to fathom what that would have been like.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I always look at my experience of being trans in school as quite tame, and I think that's because, I love my mum absolutely, but I think she also doesn't have a full understanding of obviously what was going on mentally with me during that time. So she thinks McLean's did amazing with you. And yeah, my school really did. However, people kind of forget that I also wasn't telling them a lot what was going on with me personally. So during my transition, so when I started to realize some things, I realized that my body dysmorphic kind of attitudes were definitely very gender-based, into like more gender dysphoria than just generalized body dysmorphia. I was like, oh, this is a trans thing. Yikes, that's a big decision. And then at that time, you know, I just was I felt unwelcome in my own body, I think is a good way to describe that. I felt too female to be female, but then too female to be a guy, and then too nothing to be anything. And so at that time, it also just so happened that my nana was passing away after 3 years of cancer. So my mum was working full-time at a job, but then also full-time looking after her very sick mum. And we had very little family support during that time because I don't like my family. yeah, but pretty much like...
We can blooper that one, out. Yeah,
we don't need to. Yeah, so like the whole idea of like suddenly my kid's going through this mental thing, it was not the forefront of anyone's mind. And also I grew up with, don't make a fuss, you know, that English attitude I think some people might be able to relate to, is that whole, oh, don't bother anyone, don't share what's worrying you, keep that to yourself, make it, you know, keep, you know, you set the table, make it look pretty, even if the family doesn't connect at all, you know, you set the table. So I grew up with those kind of attitudes, even if they weren't meant to be expressed that way. The whole politeness attitude that I grew up with definitely meant that sharing my feelings was impolite. So even when I was going through very dark mental health and feeling awful, a lot of people didn't even recognize what was going on until my nana did die. And then people just assumed my depression was part of grief. Mm. And I was actually diagnosed with depression at 14, 15. Mm. And the guy was like, oh, it's moderate. And he pretty much on the report was just like, oh, she sat pretty, you know, she sat with her nice hair. She looked well together. And it's like, of course I did. I've been taught. So it was still the idea that mental health is only portrayed by people that are looking really scruffy and like have awful body language. It's like, it wasn't true at the time, especially for me. So yeah, my mental health was definitely kind of just yo-yoing between still wanting and just needing to get on with my life and dealing with the grief of a family member, while also thinking that the idea to transition was inherently selfish. And I still sometimes hold on to those attitudes today, that anything I do transition-wise or for myself is a selfish act. And it's always a negative connotation with that, as opposed to, you know, this is actually good for you because then you can be good for yourself and other people. Mine was always like, if it's not serving someone else, then I shouldn't be doing it. So, yeah.
God, we're conditioned deep. That one lies deep, yeah, doesn't yeah. it? The people pleaser and the sort of...
Oh, yeah, people pleaser.
Martyr.
Yeah, but also it's like as a kid, looking after your parents, that's totally. Something that's very normalised. And I didn't realise how deep I was into that until I started to transition and started to like experience differences in my sexuality and be like, this is something I actually have to work out or I'm going to be miserable forever kind of thing. There was actually a night when I was one of the depths of my mental health and depression, anxiety. I just could not sleep and I just felt awful. And so I just like ran into the bathroom, locked, because it was the only thing in my house that has a lock on it. So I was, ran into the bathroom and I just stared at myself in the mirror and I had no idea who I was looking at. Absolutely no idea. I had outgrown this bob that had an undercut because I chopped off my hair, but then said it was for charity and things like that was fine. And then there was these purple Crayola scissors, like kids' scissors, in the bathroom. And I just had this one thought in my head, just like, cut your hair off. Just do it. And so I just grabbed a massive lump of hair at the top of my head and just snipped right at the base.
Wow.
And no one knew I was doing this or had any feelings about this. So I looked like, you know, an extra off The Walking Dead, but one of the zombies in regards to how bad the hair looked. It was definitely shouldn't be a hairdresser. There was bald patches. There were long bits. It was straight. And my hair was everywhere because I had thick hair. You know, thick, long brown hair. And it was on the bath. And then I packed it all up in a plastic bag and left it on the dining room for my mum.
Oh, wow.
And then went back to bed. So my mum came out in the morning because it's about to go to school the next day. So this is just a weekday, just a Tuesday probably.
Amazing.
And then she saw this massive bag of hair with a letter saying, I'm so sorry. And she was like, what has my kid done? And I come out and I'm bald. And she's like, right. We're going to take the day off school. So she took photos because, bless my mum, she thought I was having a psychotic episode, and rightly so, you know, something, because I was so happy and she hadn't seen me happy like that for ages.
Wow.
So suddenly I'm so happy and I had this like crappy H&M maroon polo and some fat pants and some second hand-me-down Converse. And there's a photo of my mum and I at the beach where she's kind of smiling a bit tentatively like, is my kid okay? And then I'm just beaming. I was so euphoric and she buzzed my hair right down to number one because that was what I had to end up going down to and I still had bald patches with that. And then I had to, you know, I was labelled, my school at the time had a anti-gang policy, by which it means if you had a short haircut or a buzz cut, you are part of a gang. definitely doesn't work that way.
Interesting.
So suddenly I went from good student to possible gang member needs to go into isolation. I was like, I'm not a skinhead.
But needs to go into isolation.
Yeah, I was like, okay, like I'm still fine. But yeah, so that was definitely like, if I say how did I deal with it, I would say a large part of me just didn't. The way I dealt with it was just through basic survival tactics and defense mechanisms until I broke down and happened to, fortunately, snip my hair off. And if I didn't do that, I really don't know where I'd be. I might still be female and just miserable, you know?
Wow.
So yeah, I just snipped all my hair off. It was a great day.
Interrupting this delicious conversation with an important announcement. When it comes to the pursuit of pleasure, especially in the realms of food, let it be known that I will always seek out the most delicious of all. And in my humble opinion, when it comes to cakes, the Caker is exactly that. The Caker was established by Jordan Rundell in 2010 as a made-to-order cake business, selling homemade-style cakes that, I can confirm, taste even better than they look. The bakery pumping out hundreds of cakes a day wasn't enough to fulfill Jordan's desire to provide cakes to a wider audience. So she spent several years developing a line of luxury cake kits. She chose some of her favourite recipes to turn into these cake kits and put all the same quality ingredients used in her bakeries, one in Auckland and one in LA, inside of them. All of her recipes contain almond flour, which means your baked cake will be exceptionally moist. You will never believe it came from a box. No special equipment is needed, and they come complete with decorations and a non-stick baking tin liner. Seriously, why wouldn't you? You can get your hands on a kit by visiting the Caker website, www.thecaker.co.nz, and ordering online or popping into a stockist near you. So was that the point where you're like, okay, I'm transitioning?
It was, I wasn't actually even sure if I was trans at that point, I don't think. I think that was the point where I was like, it was the first time ever in my life that I felt I truly did something completely and only for myself. Because I know that no one else wanted my hair short. And they didn't care if it was for shave, for a cure, or anything. They just didn't like it.
Yeah.
And it was the first time, like, oh, I can make choices on my own. And I can actually do things like this. Like, I can, this felt like I was in a movie. It felt fake, you know? I was like, but I can make these choices. And I had done it. And now I have to deal with, if I had done this, then it means I have to do everything else. So it was definitely, I think a lot of people see when I talk about my transition, they think, oh, when I first took testosterone, when I had surgery. Mm. But honestly, those were just baby steps compared to cutting all my hair off.
That was
the moment where I decided everything at 15.
Wow. You know?
Yeah. It's definitely interesting looking back on it.
It's like this, like, fierce, like, action of liberation. It feels so good. Like, oh, as you're saying that,
cutting your hair
I'm
off
like,
and
having, oh.
Yeah. If anyone hasn't had a buzz cut, get one. Showers feel amazing. That feels so good.
Wow. Yeah. And what about your family around you? Obviously, you mentioned just before.
Not a big fan of them.
Not a big fan of your family. But what was the support system around you? Your family, your friends, your school? Like, how did you navigate that? And what? How did they feel about your transition? And
I think for a lot of people, especially in the area that I was in, I was the first trans person they'd met. So I was not only acting as someone figuring out, because I was one of the first trans people I'd ever met and ever experienced. So that was a weird thing, being like, hi, me, you know, but then also having to be an advocate and speaker on all these very massive topics about trans rights and what the experiences of being trans is, to all these people who were desperate to know. And also, they're 15-year-old and 16-year-old teenagers. And, you know, they're 16-year-old boys. And I know that's a stereotype, but some of them really were 16-year-old boys asking about my junk and what that meant. If they had a crush on me, does that make them gay now? Which was fun, because I definitely looked them square in the eye and go, oh, yes. Yeah, I maybe had too much fun with it. I was like, you deserve it. For my sister, she, ironically enough, the first reaction I remember having her said and having been told was, my whole life's changing. And yes, I agree. Having a sibling come out as trans is a massive, massive deal. But also looking back, I go, well, mine is, actually. I know yours is definitely changing. It's the massive shift. And I fully understand what it must have been like for her at a school of 2,600 to be wedged between your siblings, now the trans person of the school, first out trans person at this school, You know, she got a brunt of a lot of just really awful comments and disgusting, vile, just ugh comments about so many different things.
Children are so mean.
Yeah, there was this massive incestuous joke that went around, like a transition to try and fuck my sister.
Oh,
it was gross.
What?
And she got told that. So people weren't coming up to me a lot of the time and telling me this. Mm. It was always friends, side comments, passing whispers, and things like that. So I think at the time, everyone in my family, as most people are, dealt with it in with the resources that they had, with the best knowledge that they did. But looking back, there was definitely a lot of places where I accepted and was way too passive, in areas where I now would be far more, actually, no. You know, because I became prefect and academic captain after I transitioned. And it was mainly just for the poster child kind of view. It was the token. It was the whole, like, you're the trans person in the school. And look at us at this conservative school.
Oh, wow.
And I wrote on my forms because they said, you need to apply. And I said, I don't really want to. I haven't done any co-curricular because I've been depressed and mental. So I haven't exactly gone into kapa haka, you know, and things like that. And so all of a sudden it's like, now you need to do all these things. And there were kids that really tried hard to get prefect and they worked their whole school lives to get it. And then they kind of just handed me these things like, well, you're the trans one. And I never want to be there. And I never wanted to be there. I ended up taking it because I was like, hey, I've got a resume. This is fine.
Yeah.
Never used it for the resume. But it was kind of like, hey, I don't need this position. I don't want them. There are kids that I wrote this on my form. I said, there are people that have worked way harder to get this job. Do not hand it to me just because I'm trans. And they're like, da, 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 da. Here's your trans
here
one.
You go.
I'm like, okay. I moved a cone. That was a yeah, moved a cone for people rushing after school. But yeah, I think I sent an email to my mum. So my mum's reaction was, my mum's been the biggest supporter of everything. She's been to every appointment that she can possibly be at.
Amazing.
And she, you know, waiting outside of every surgery. She's met every doctor. Unfortunately, my dad didn't. And it wasn't because he's against me being trans. He just has, he's emotionally 2D, I would say. He has no emotional capacity or has never learned how to be emotionally vulnerable.
Mm.
So he never talked to me about my transition. And he still doesn't.
Mm.
It's kind of just this thing that's there. And it's quite awkward sometimes because it's like, oh, what have you been up to? It's like, oh, yeah, I've just had surgery, you know? And I'll be like, oh, cool. You know, it doesn't go any further than that, whereas my mum's far more involved and, like, she likes to know about it and learn about it and see how she can help me because, yeah, it was just, like, a muddled situation in regards to, at the time of me coming out as trans, my dad cheated and left my mum. So he left the house in the middle of my transition. So all of a sudden, my mum's got a full household with me, my sister, you know, the dog, the cat, in the home. And then my dad's off with his new partner. And, you know, live your life. But, like, it was at the time, it felt like a bit abandoned. You know, I felt a bit abandoned. And he still stayed in the house, unfortunately, for a few months, even with all the knowledge.
Wow.
Very awkward.
Very awkward.
Very English. Oh, we won't bother anyone. He can he can sleep downstairs, still make breakfast and all the things, you know. So,
Meanwhile, you've just had surgery.
Oh, no, I just come out as trans then.
So okay, right.
Yeah, and then later on, a few years after, I ended up having surgery. But then he didn't know. He never visited me in hospital, didn't help with any part of the recovery, neither did my sister.
Wow.
So it was just me and my mum a lot of the time against and dealing with a lot of the brunt of my transition, because it's a lot of effort. And then sadly, I know so many people that were in those waiting rooms alone without a parent. I honestly am just super grateful that I had someone that was my friend during that time, because it's isolating. And going to doctors every 3 months and being told that you're infertile and then you're fertile now, and that I was injecting myself every 3 weeks and having to organize my prescriptions and needles and while still just like, hey, I need to apply to uni, or like, I need to look into how long my wait time for surgery is, and you know, trying to navigate life. And also during the ages where a lot of people are starting to have sex, you know, in regards to that topic, you know.
Yes.
Everyone's like, everyone's having sex. They're 16 to 18. Everyone's starting to go through those experiences. And I felt completely on the outside.
Wow.
It was just a weird time.
Had you had any sexual experiences prior to that? Prior to your transition or your surgery?
Mostly, I would say online flings. Nothing ever serious. More just like, kids that are way too young to be sexting.
Yeah.
you know, the cursed likes of Omegle and some other apps.
Yeah.
Your one was Yellow, and I was like, God. luckily, all gone now, I hope. Yeah. But, you know, just like kids trying to explore their sexuality, but with each other, there's a weird way. But I never dated anyone. But when I started to transition, I had one girlfriend, and she was lovely. Mm. But I was like, I'm going to drag her through all my mental health stuff and all my transition. She doesn't deserve me. Mm. And I was like, okay. So I broke up with her because I was like, she doesn't deserve someone as awful as me. She needs to have, she's so pretty and she's so amazing. She needs to be with someone that's going to be able to do that for her. And then it was this weird blend of, I'm in the middle of my transition, still getting some forms of attention from some people, but then also being completely disgusted by others and people being like, hey, you're disgusting. And I was like, nice to meet you too. Like,
wow.
Like, okay, cool.
What, they would say that to your face?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've had people just, I've had online comments. I think I even got an email one time. I had no idea. I think someone literally used my school email to message me being like, you're nasty. And I was like, okay. Yeah. But it was weird because as soon as I started presenting more masculine, not only did I get far more attention, be like, oh, you're actually like, oh, for a trans person, you're actually like kind of decent. I was like, what a compliment, you know?
Wow.
And then I started being obviously a bit more upfront and face in the school. And obviously then people would meet me and not know that I was trans. And so they would start to look at me as a cis person, so to speak, cis passing, so to speak. And they'd be like, wow, you're a cute guy. And then I'd feel like betraying them, like, well, I'm actually trans. And they'd be like, okay. And I'm like, oh, I can be two of those things in unison. That's amazing. You know, this is totally a recent development. Yeah. I can be trans and cute. Wow, this is not what I've been told or emailed, you know? Yeah, so it's been very mumble-jumbled a lot of the time, really.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a journey.
Well, that was just 15 to 16 months.
Let's keep moving. So what happened next? Okay, so after you've had the surgery, you've like come to identify as trans and you've gone through that like experience of navigating all of that,
yeah.
Your family, your sister,
well,
your other people's projections onto you, like society, all of that.
Mm.
How have you since navigated your sexuality and your pleasure?
Well, it's interesting you say that because my most recent surgery, it wasn't my double mastectomy. My double mastectomy was in 2020. And then my most recent surgery was 2021.
Wow.
Where I had a revision. So in regards to exploring my body openly and freely, I was in two long-term relationships most of the time. Mm. So my first relationship, really nice guy. He really validated my sexuality. And this was when I was 18. So I was still pre-surgery. And he really validated my sexuality and also my ability to be a sexual person. Because I've always identified, I feel, as someone that's quite sensual and sexual. Mm. But obviously that was so harshly criticized being female, but then also completely removed from me being trans.
Mm.
So then exploring the dating scene, and people being like, hey, like, I'm into you, and making moves. I was like, you good, bro? Like, what are you doing? Like, you know what I am, right? Like, you know that I'm this thing. So it's been a long time really tackling kind of the negative distortions I've had in my body because I've been so heavily critiqued. I've been pinched by plastic surgeons. I prod myself with an injection all the time, constantly at doctors and nurses and people telling me, and then kind of the online world of trans people where a lot of the people that are making channels or talking about it, a lot of them are really deep into their transition or really cis passing, hence why they get popular, because people are looking up to them being like, wow, I can look like a guy.
Mm.
And then when I started to realize I didn't want that as much, one part of me was like, well, I'm too far to go back now. I just kind of have to keep going.
Mm.
And then only now am I like, actually, guys can wear skirts. Actually, anyone can wear skirts, you know? And then the more I started being like that and people actually started being positive around it for once, it's like I've worn more skirts and crop tops presenting with chest hair and a flat chest than I did ever as a girl.
Yes.
And so it's been nice to kind of let, you know, loosen the reins on myself a bit, you know? I felt like I was always just given this, like, charging horse. It just went everywhere and I was like, oh my God, I have to control it. And now I'm just like, spirited out, you know, just like run away.
Yes.
You know, maybe not as soft as the Disney movie, but, you know, definitely like just like let it be free a little bit more. I started exploring makeup and this is like recent. This is like months, you know, I haven't done any of this because when I was in relationships with people, I felt like they also wanted me to be a more cis trans person, you know? So even if they never expressed that, I still felt like I had to have this certain way of being, even in the relationship. Only outside of it, I'm actually like, actually, I can explore this a lot more freely because I still don't feel like I have to be something for someone. I can actually just do something for myself, you know, have a cut the hair moment.
Yes.
A lot more often and a lot more diluted.
Oh.
Definitely don't recommend just not going to a barber. You know, it wasn't a great fade I gave myself. But yeah, it's very recent development, and it's interesting talking to people. There's still very a lot of ignorance, and maybe not always understood ignorance, but definitely some people that are just straight up rude about the way they ask about someone's body, and especially as trans people, I think when I was growing up, I thought that people were allowed to ask the questions that they did. And now I have far more respect. And because I am more cis-passing, which is a privilege that I am and can bend the rules a lot more comfortable, that's a huge state of privilege that I am in. I can police people a bit more in how they approach me, you know.
Beautiful.
Yeah, it's very
What are some of the inappropriate questions that you've been asked that you're just like, that is just not okay? Like,
well, first day of school, first day in shorts and presenting as Drew at the time, which, you know, last name, but neutral. I was like, hey, this works.
Yeah.
Hadn't picked my name at that point. I think I was going by Flynn or something. I was like, Flynn's a cool name.
Flynn is a cool name.
Yeah. I was like, but I'm not a Flynn. I'm not cool. But I was in PE and I hadn't brought my PE uniform, so I sat on the sidelines with this other girl. And this was a girl I'd maybe walked to class with a couple times. She was generally interested, but I've never had anyone interested in someone like this. So she sits down next to me and I'm like, hey, you know, hi girl that I sometimes talk to class in. And she goes, oh, so like, are you a guy now? And I go, yeah, right this second, just decided, you know, off a whim. Quirky, little Monday choices. And then she's like, oh, the second question I ever got asked. So what do you do with your pubes? And I stood back. I stood back for a second because I was like, I obviously misheard that. This, you know. By the way, I'm you know.
Surely not.
Yeah, 15. Like, surely. So English, you know. She wouldn't just ask me about my pubic hair. Yeah. Tosh, tosh. And I was like, yeah. So she's like, what do you do with your pubic? Do you like style it into like a penis? And I was like, I was actually kind of stunned because not only was I in a public space of PE. You know, I think the teacher only just finished giving instructions. Yes, no. And I was just like, do you ask everyone that? She goes, no, 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 just you. And I was like, oh, so she obviously at the time saw no fault with me, her asking about my genitals as a trans person, because obviously I'm entitled to ask that question.
Wow.
So no, I don't fishtail my pubes into a penis-shaped thing, if you are my answering that question now for you, girl. As I'm sure most people don't. If they do, good on them. I personally don't braid. They don't really get that long, you know? And it's like, it was so odd. It was the second question I was ever asked. I've also just been asked, like, so do you have a vagina? And, like, just the way they ask it, it's so just, like, this. You could say hello first.
Yeah.
Like, before asking me about my labia. Like, you know, there's a little warm-up, you know, before conversations like these that you could initiate in. Or they could be like, I'm sorry to ask this, but can I ask you? Especially when it's on, like, dating app and hookups apps and things like that.
Yeah.
I do get when people ask, what's your junk doing? Because it makes sense. They might lick them. You know, they want to know what they're
absolutely
licking. And that's fine.
Mm.
But some people, they're like, what does trans men mean? Or they message, or I've messaged someone, and they go, oh, I can't believe I have to say this, but, like, no, like, bloody trendy. And then they, like, say a slur or something. And I'm like, you could just say no.
Yeah.
You don't have to make it about me being trans at the basis of your rejecting me, even if it is. You just say, sorry, not interested.
Totally.
You know? I don't reject ugly cis guys being like, sorry, you're cis. You know? I'm like, yes. Sorry, not interested. I can at least be polite about it.
Yes.
So a lot of questions I get asked are mostly just, like, it's that interrogation style questioning. It's like, well, how often do you have to inject yourself? And do you get this? Like, are you horny all the time? And it's like, what's your vagina like? And it's like, do you ask your friends or your mum what her vagina's like? Like, then no, then I'm not actually not going to answer that. And then growing up, though, I felt like I had to because they're entitled to know all these things about me because I'm the weird one. I have to explain myself all the time. And fortunately, I've grown out of that through experience, you know. It's like, for the record, I have a vagina. Okay? Okay. Good?
Good. We good here?
Yeah,
perfect.
We're good.
Let's move on.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like, how desperate do you need to know what's in my pants?
Wow.
Like, oh, my gosh. It's just odd when people that aren't planning to have sex with me are really interested in what I look like down there. It's like pretty usual, honestly. Mm. You know, I'm not a Ken doll, you know, like I'm not this cursed smooth bump, you know,
yes.
Like, yeah. Some people think that testosterone does like this crazy transformation to your body and it does, but they think like I've grown a penis overnight, like perfectly formed and everything.
Wow.
And it's like, no. And if I did, I think the waiting list in New Zealand is something like 30, 40 years. I don't need a dick when I'm 60. I think I could have figured it out before then if I really needed to.
None
you know?
Of your business.
Yeah. It's like, yeah.
No, like, how's your head? How's your heart? It's like, do you have a vagina?
Yeah, like, Jeff, you really don't need to know.
Like, back up, Jeff, actually. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. With all the wisdom that you've got now, based on all of your experience of your life to date, which is a lot of experience, what would you tell your younger self?
It's funny that you asked that, actually, because I recently wrote a piece kind of describing kind of this kind of journey, a very diluted part of my transition, but like the cutting of the hair and things like that. And I don't think I'd be actually able to constructively tell younger me anything, really. It'd be like, watch out, you know.
Yeah.
I think if I was to look at little old me, you know, with my bob and my intense dimples and even shorter, I'd just say you can actually do things for yourself. Like, it is okay. And the choice that is right will always be the one that makes you happy. And that might not be short term, but it definitely will always be long term. And I think that's what the most important thing is. I'll probably give little old me a hug. I'll be like, oh, you're all right, love, you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Good people that make you laugh, people that make you like have abs and like really sore cheeks when you finish being with them, those are the good people, you know, people that make you really, that lightness that you get in your soul, in your essence, that you just go, wow, this is someone I click with, this is someone I belong with. And there's heaps of them out there, but it's far better to wait for them than to stick around people who, you know, people like Jeff who ask about your vagina
Jeff,
all the time.
Fuck off, Jeff.
I'm sorry to Jeff. Like, don't know why, but I feel like the last guy that visited me was Jeff and I just didn't like him. You know, just, yeah, kindness is always a thing. And a lot of things are your choice. And you actually have to be active in the choices you make, even if it's a difficult one. You know? Yeah.
Beautiful. I love that. I actually have an off-piece question, which is, I know that you're a psychology nerd.
Yes, I am.
Expressed to me in recent conversations. And I want to know about your driving force behind learning psychology and why you've become such a psychology nerd and what you want to do with that.
Oh, well, I think that me undergoing my transition was definitely an inspiration, but I've always been gravitated towards knowing about people. Maybe I'm nosy, but I've always just loved people all the time. And I think that when I hear about people and I learn about them and I learn for the reasons behind their behavior, I find that part of science very empowering. I actually find science to me is very spiritual. I'm not a religious person personally, and I grew up with religious influence, but when I look at people's minds and how they work and why they react to something the way they do, or why they find certain things funny or certain things not, I always just find that the best part, because the more you learn about someone, you get to see kind of how their life's played out for them. And even people that seem very shallow and unassuming, there's always a story. And I'm a big reader, so I kind of see psychology as being a way to dive into the chapters of people's lives, but then help them rewrite one that's going to make them happier. So
beautiful.
I'd love to go into either something like lecturing or counselling, or I'd definitely love to work with LGBT and Takatapui and just really get involved with that side of psychology, because it's still very heavily Eurocentric and dominated by like a cis and heteronormative lens. And so I'd love to actually be doing studies that are for trans people, by trans people, as well as by gay people, for gay people, and, you know, just get everyone else involved rather than just old white men and Freud, you know. Cool concept, some of them, but we do need a little bit of an update, you know. A lot's happening with mental health.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We're moving forward. We're evolving. Yeah. We're progressing.
We are evolving.
Amazing. Amazing. And before I ask my final question, I just want to know, is there anything else you feel called to share, or any advice that you'd like to give anyone listening, or insights or perspectives that come to mind?
I think if anyone listens to this.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think, hopefully, you know, hi microphone. Yeah. It's just that you can do it, and that can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. I felt very stuck for a long time, and fortunately I was given the resources to be actually able to push past that and to do it, but those resources exist for everyone out there, and you can actually do it. You take accountability for yourself and what you're accountable for. You can't blame everyone else forever. And, you know, families are messed up, you know, they're always messed up, and people don't react to sexuality and, you know, trans as well and things like that. But take accountability for what you can take accountability for. Go to counseling, go to therapy, you know, and then find a life that is worth living for you. It's way too short to please other people, because you'll never please anyone.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Fuck yes to that. Thank you.
And get a buzz cut. It's very fun.
Absolutely.
And chop showers feel your hair amazing with a buzz cut. It feels like those, like, stretchy things down your head.
Oh.
They're really good. Yeah.
Feeling really inspired by the buzz cut, actually. Okay, final question of the day.
Yes.
What is your favourite finger food?
I have to say I really like fruit as a finger food on a platter. I have to say a good strawberry or a good cherry.
Mm.
Love a red fruit. I'm a red kind of gal.
Yes.
So yeah, I would probably say cherries, but you always need a good place to spit out the pips. Not fun to swallow.
Yes. Amazing. It's so good to be in the summer season of all the delicious red cherries and strawberries and all of their delicious.
Yeah, yes to that. As well.
Yes to that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been an honour.
I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you, and this has been deeply insightful for me, and I'm just, like, blown away by your just awesomeness and, yeah.
You're very kind.
Willingness to share, and, yeah, I really appreciate you, and, yeah, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. This is great. This is really fun.
Yay! Mwah! Thanks for dining with Finger Food, empowered by Bumble. If you liked this conversation, you can tip your maitre d' by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing this podcast with your friends. If you want to find more of my podcasts, go to stacyogorman.com. Stay safe, stay sexy. See you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.